Santor was still there, twiddling at the controls of the video. The footsteps behind him caused him to glance over his shoulder. Hi. Aren't you in bed yet? I've been spending hours on the video trying to get something other than bulletins. It seems the F.S. Hober-Mallow is delayed in course and hasn't been heard from. Really? What do they suspect? What do you think? Kalganian skullduggery? There are reports that Kalganian vessels were sighted in the general space sector in which the Hober-Mallow was last heard from. Darrell shrugged, and Anthor rubbed his forehead doubtfully. Look, Doc, he said. Why don't you go to Trantor? Why should I? Because you're no good to us here. You're not yourself. You can't be. And you could accomplish a purpose by going to Trantor, too. The old Imperial Library with the complete records of the proceedings of the Selden Commissioner there. No. The library has been picked clean, and it hasn't helped anyone. It helped Ebling Meese once. How do you know? Yes, he said he found the second foundation, and my mother killed him 5 seconds later as the only way to keep him from unwittingly revealing its location to the mule. But in doing so, she also, you realize, made it impossible ever to tell whether Meese really did know the location. After all, no one else has ever been able to deduce the truth from those records. Ebling Meese, if you'll remember, was working under the driving impetus of the mule's mind. I know that, too, but Meese's mind was, by that very token, in an abnormal state. Do you and I know anything about the properties of a mind under the emotional control of another? About its abilities and shortcomings? In any case, I will not go to Trantor. Anthor frowned. Well, why the vehemence? I merely suggested it as... Well, by space, I don't understand you. You look 10 years older. You're obviously having a hellish time of it. You're not doing anything of value here. If I were you, I'd go and get the girl. Exactly. It's what I want to do, too. That's why I won't do it. Look, Anthor, and try to understand. You're playing, we're both playing, with something completely beyond our powers to fight. In cold blood, if you have any, you know that, whatever you may think in your moments of quixoticism. For 50 years we've known that the Second Foundation is the real descendant and pupil of Seldonian mathematics. What that means, and you know that too, is that nothing in the galaxy happens which does not play a part in their reckoning. To us, all life is a series of accidents to be met with by improvisations. To them, all life is purposive and should be met by pre-calculation. But they have their weaknesses. Their work is statistical, and only the mass action of humanity is truly inevitable. Now, how I play a part as an individual in the foreseen course of history, I don't know. Perhaps I have no definite part, since the plan leaves individuals to indeterminacy and free will. But I am important, and they, you understand, may at least have calculated my probable reaction. So I distrust my impulses, my desires, my probable reactions. I would rather present them with an improbable reaction. I will stay here despite the fact that I yearn very desperately to leave. No, because I yearn very desperately to leave. The younger man smiled sourly. You don't know your own mind as well as they might. Suppose that, knowing you, they might count on what you think. Merely think is the improbable reaction, simply by knowing in advance what your line of reasoning would be. In that case, There is no escape. For if I follow the reasoning you have just outlined and go to Trantor, they may have foreseen that too. There is an endless cycle of double, 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 double crosses. No matter how far I follow that cycle, I can only either go or stay. The intricate act of luring my daughter halfway across the galaxy cannot be meant to make me stay where I am, since I would most certainly have stayed if they had done nothing. It can only be to make me move, and so I will stay. And besides, Anthor, not everything bears the breath of the second foundation. Not all events are the results of their puppeting. They may have had nothing to do with Arcadia's leave-taking, and she may be safe on Trantor when all the rest of us are dead. No, said Anthor sharply. Now you're off the track. You have an alternative interpretation?
I have, if you'll listen.
Oh, go ahead. I don't lack patience.
Well then, how well do you know your own daughter?
How well can any individual know any other? Obviously, my knowledge is inadequate.
So is mine on that basis, perhaps even more so.
But at least I viewed her with fresh eyes. Item one. She is a ferocious little romantic, the only child of an ivory tower academician, growing up in an unreal world of video and book film adventure. She lives in a weird, self-constructed fantasy of espionage and intrigue.
Item two. She's intelligent about it. Intelligent enough to outwit us, at any rate. She planned carefully to overhear our first conference and succeeded. She planned carefully to go to Kalgan with Mun and succeeded.
Item three. She has an unholy hero worship of her grandmother, your mother, who defeated the mule.
I'm right so far, I think.
All right, then. Now, unlike you, I've received a complete report from Lieutenant Dirige, and in addition, my sources of information on Kalgan are rather complete, and all sources check. We know, for instance, that Homer Mun, in conference with the Lord of Kalgan, was refused admission to the mule's palace, and that this refusal was suddenly abrogated after Arcadia had spoken to Lady Calia, the First Citizen's very good friend. Darrell interrupted.
And how do you know all this?
For one thing, Mun was interviewed by Dirige as part of the police campaign to locate Arcadia. Naturally, we have a complete transcript of the questions and answers. And take Lady Calia herself. It is rumored that she has lost Stettin's interest, but the rumor isn't borne out by facts. She not only remains unreplaced, is not only able to mediate the Lord's refusal to Mun into an acceptance, but can even engineer Arcadia's escape openly. Why, a dozen of the soldiers about Stettin's executive mansion testified that they were seen together on the last evening. Yet she remains unpunished. This despite the fact that Arcadia was searched for with every appearance of diligence. But what is your conclusion from all this torrent of ill connection?
That Arcadia's escape was arranged.
As I said.
With this addition, that Arcadia must have known it was arranged. That Arcadia, the bright little girl who saw cabals everywhere, saw this one and followed your own type of reasoning. They wanted her to return to the Foundation, and so she went to Trantor instead.
But why Trantor?
Well, why?
Because that is where Beta, her idolized grandmother, escaped when she was in flight. Consciously or unconsciously, Arcadia imitated that. I wonder then if Arcadia was fleeing
the same enemy.
The mule? Asked Durrell with polite sarcasm. Of course not. I mean by the enemy. A mentality that she could not fight. She was running from the Second Foundation, or such influence thereof as could be found on Calgan.
What influence is this you speak of?
Do you expect Calgan to be immune from that ubiquitous menace? We both have come to the conclusion, somehow, that Arcadia's escape was arranged, right? She was searched for and found, but deliberately allowed to slip away by Durridge. By Durridge! Do you understand? But how was that? Because he was our man. But how did they know that? Surely they could not have been counting on him to be a traitor. Huh, Doc?
Now you're saying that they honestly meant to recapture her. Frankly, you're tiring me a bit, Anthor. Finish your say. I want to go to bed.
My say is quickly finished.
Anthor reached for a small group of photo records in his inner pocket. It was the familiar wigglings of the encephalograph.
Durridge's brainwaves, Anthor said casually. Taken since he returned.
It was quite visible to Durrell's naked eye, and his face was gray when he looked up.
He is controlled.
Exactly. He allowed Arcadia to escape not because he was our man, but because he was the Second Foundation's. Even after he knew she was going to Trantor and not to Terminus.
Anthor shrugged.
He had been geared to let her go. There was no way he could modify that. He was only a tool, you see? It was just that Arcadia followed the least probable course, and is probably safe, or at least safe until such time as the Second Foundation can modify the plans to take into account this changed state of affairs. He paused. The little signal light on the video set was flashing. On an independent circuit, it signified the presence of emergency news. Durrell saw it too, and with the mechanical movement of long habit, turned on the video. They broke in upon the middle of a sentence, but before its completion, they knew that the Hober Mallow, or the wreck thereof, had been found, and that for the first time in nearly half a century, the Foundation was again at war. Anthor's jaw was set in a hard line. All right, Doc. You heard that. Calgan has attacked, and Calgan is under the control of the Second Foundation. Will you follow your daughter's lead and move to Trantor?
No. I will risk it. Here.
Dr. Durrell. You are not as intelligent as your daughter. I wonder how far you can be trusted.
His long, level stare held Durrell for a moment, and then without a word, he left. And Durrell was left in uncertainty and almost despair. Unheeded, the video was a medley of excited sight sound, as it described in nervous detail the first hour of the war between Calgan and the Foundation.
Chapter 17. War. The mayor of the Foundation brushed futilely at the picket fence of hair that rimmed his skull. He sighed. The years that we have wasted, the chances we have thrown away. I make no recriminations, Dr. Durrell, but we deserve defeat.
Durrell said quietly, I see no reason for lack of confidence in events, sir.
Lack of confidence? Lack of confidence? By the galaxy, Dr. Durrell, on what would you base any other attitude? Come here.
He half-led, half-forced Durrell toward the limpid ovoid cradled gracefully on its tiny force field support. At a touch of the mayor's hand, it glowed within. An accurate, three-dimensional model of the galactic double spiral.
In yellow, said the mayor, excitedly, we have that region of space under Foundation control. In red, that under Calgan.
What Durrell saw was a crimson sphere resting within a stretching yellow fist that surrounded it on all sides, but that toward the center of the galaxy.
Galactography, said the mayor, is our greatest enemy. Our admirals make no secret of our almost hopeless strategic position. Observe. The enemy has inner lines of communication. He is concentrated, can meet us on all sides with equal ease. He can defend himself with minimum force. We are expanded. The average distance between inhabited systems within the Foundation is nearly three times that within Calgan. To go from Santani to Locris, for instance, is a voyage of 2,500 parsecs for us, but only 800 parsecs for them, if we remain within our respective territories.
Durrell said, I understand all that, sir.
And you do not understand that it may mean defeat.
There is more than distance to war. I say we cannot lose. It is quite impossible.
And why do you say that?
Because of my own interpretation of the Selden plan.
Oh. The mayor's lips twisted, and the hands behind his back flapped one within the other. Then you rely, too, on the mystical help of the Second Foundation.
No. Merely on the help of inevitability, and of courage and persistence. And yet, behind his easy confidence, he wondered, what if? Well, what if Anthor were right and Calgan were a direct tool of the mental wizards? What if it was their purpose to defeat and destroy the Foundation?
No. It made no sense.
And yet, he smiled bitterly. Always the same. Always that peering and peering through the opaque granite which, to the enemy, was so transparent. Nor were the galactographic verities of the situation lost upon Stettin. The Lord of Calgan stood before a twin of the galactic model which the mayor and Durrell had inspected. Except that where the mayor frowned, Stettin smiled. His admiral's uniform glistered imposingly upon his massive figure. The crimson sash of the Order of the Mule awarded him by the former First Citizen, whom 6 months later he had replaced somewhat forcefully, spanned his chest diagonally from right shoulder to waist. The silver star with double comets and swords sparkled brilliantly upon his left shoulder. He addressed the 6 men of his general staff, whose uniforms were only less grandiloquent than his own, and his First Minister as well, thin and gray, a darkling cobweb lost in the brightness. Stettin said, I think the decisions are clear. We can afford to wait. To them, every day of delay will be another blow at their morale. If they attempt to defend all portions of their realm, they will be spread thin and we can strike through in 2 simultaneous thrusts. Here and here. He indicated the directions on the galactic model. 2 lances of pure white shooting through the yellow fist from the red ball it enclosed, cutting Terminus off on either side in a tight arc. In such a manner, we cut their fleet into 3 parts which can be defeated in detail. If they concentrate, they give up 2/3 of their dominions voluntarily and will probably risk rebellion. The First Minister's thin voice alone seeped through the hush that followed.
In 6 months, he said, the Foundation will grow 6 months stronger. Their resources are greater, as we all know. Their navy is numerically stronger. Their manpower is virtually inexhaustible. Perhaps a quick thrust would be safer.
His was easily the least influential voice in the room. Lord Stedden smiled and made a flat gesture with his hand. The 6 months, or a year, if necessary, will cost us nothing. The men of the Foundation cannot prepare. They are ideologically incapable of it. It is in their very philosophy to believe that the second Foundation will save them. But not this time, eh? The men in the room stirred uneasily. You lack confidence, I believe, said Stettin frigidly. Is it necessary once again to describe the reports of our agents in Foundation territory, or to repeat the findings of Mr. Homer Munn, the Foundation agent, now in our, service? Let us adjourn, gentlemen. Stettin returned to his private chambers with a fixed smile still on his face. He sometimes wondered about this Homer Munn. A queer, water-spined fellow who certainly did not bear out his early promise. And yet he crawled with interesting information that carried conviction with it, particularly when Kalia was present. His smile broadened. That fat fool had her uses, after all. At least she got more with her wheedling out of Munn than he could, and with less trouble. Why not give her to Munn? He frowned. Kalia. She and her stupid jealousy. Space! If he still had the Durrell girl, why hadn't he ground Kalia's skull to powder for that? He couldn't quite put his finger on the reason. Maybe because she got along with Munn. And he needed Munn. It was Munn, for instance, who had demonstrated that, at least in the belief of the mule, there was no second Foundation. His admirals needed that assurance. He would have liked to make the proofs public, but it was better to let the Foundation believe in their non-existent help. Was it actually Kalia who had pointed that out? That's right. She had said, oh, nonsense. She couldn't have said anything. And yet, he shook his head to clear it and passed on. Chapter 18, Ghost of a World. Trantor was a world in dregs and rebirth. Set like a faded jewel in the midst of the bewildering crowd of suns at the center of the galaxy, in the heaps and clusters of stars piled high with aimless prodigality, it alternately dreamed of past and future. Time had been when the insubstantial ribbons of control had stretched out from its metal coating to the very edges of stardom. It had been a single city, housing 400 billion administrators, the mightiest capital that had ever been. Until the decay of the empire eventually reached it, and in the great sack of a century ago, its drooping powers had been bent back upon themselves and broken forever. In the blasting ruin of death, the metal shell that circled the planet wrinkled and crumpled into an aching mock of its own grandeur. The survivors tore up the metal plating and sold it to other planets for seed and cattle. The soil was uncovered once more, and the planet returned to its beginnings. In the spreading areas of primitive agriculture, it forgot its intricate and colossal past. Or would have, but for the still mighty shards that heaped their massive ruins toward the sky in bitter and dignified silence. Arcadia watched the metal rim of the horizon with a stirring of the heart. The village in which the Palvers lived was but a huddle of houses to her, small and primitive. The fields that surrounded it were golden yellow, wheat-clogged tracts. But there, Just past the reaching point was the memory of the past, still glowing in unrusted splendor and burning with fire where the sun of Trantor caught it in gleaming highlights. She had been there once during the months since she had arrived at Trantor. She had climbed onto the smooth, unjointed pavement and ventured into the silent, dust-streaked structures where the light entered through the jags of broken walls and partitions. It had been solidified heartache. It had been blasphemy. She had left, clangingly, running until her feet pounded softly on earth once more. And then she could only look back longingly. She dared not disturb that mighty brooding once more. Somewhere on this world, she knew, she had been born. Near the old Imperial Library, which was the veriest Trantor of Trantor. It was the sacred of the sacred, the holy of holies. Of all the world, it alone had survived the Great Sack, and for a century it had remained complete and untouched, defiant of the universe. There, Harry Seldon and his group had woven their unimaginable web. There, Ebling Meese pierced the secret and sat numbed in his vast surprise until he was killed to prevent the secret from going further. There, at the Imperial Library, her grandparents had lived for 10 years until the mule died and they could return to the reborn foundation. There at the Imperial Library, her own father returned with his bride to find the second foundation once again, but failed. There, she had been born, and there, her mother had died. She would have liked to visit the library again, but Preem Palver shook his round head. "It's thousands of miles, Arcady, and there's so much to do here. Besides, it's not good to bother there. You know, it's a shrine." But Arcadia knew that he had no desire to visit the library, that it was a case of the mule's palace over again. There was this superstitious fear on the part of the pygmies of the present for the relics of the giants of the past. Yet it would have been horrible to feel a grudge against the funny little man for that. She had been on Trantor now for over 3 months, and in all that time, he and she, Papa and Mama, had been wonderful to her. And what was her return? Why, to involve them in the common ruin. Had she warned them that she was marked for destruction, perhaps? No. She let them assume the deadly role of protectors. Her conscience panged unbearably. Yet what choice had she? She stepped reluctantly down the stairs to breakfast. The voices reached her. Preem Palver had tucked the napkin down his shirt collar with a twist of his plump neck and had reached for his poached eggs with an uninhibited satisfaction. "I was down in the city yesterday, Mama," he said, wielding his fork and nearly drowning the words with a capacious mouthful. "And what is down in the city, Papa?" asked Mama indifferently, sitting down, looking sharply about the table and rising again for the salt. Not so good. A ship came in from out Calgan way with newspapers from there. It's war there."
"War? So?
Well, let them break their heads if they have no more sense inside. Did your paycheck come yet? Papa, I'm telling you again. You warn old man Kosker, this isn't the only cooperative in the world. It's bad enough they pay you what I'm ashamed to tell my friends, but at least on time they could be." "Time schmime," said Papa irritably. "Look, don't make me silly talk at breakfast. It should choke me each bite in the throat." And he wreaked havoc among the buttered toast as he said it. He added somewhat more moderately, "The fighting is between Calgan and the Foundation, and for 2 months they've been at it." His hands lunged at one another in mock representation of a space fight. And what's doing?" "Bad for the Foundation." Well, you saw Calgan. All soldiers. They were ready. The foundation was not, and so, poof. And suddenly, Mama laid down her fork and hissed, "Fool!" "Huh? Dumbhead? Your big mouth is always moving and wagging." She was pointing quickly, and when Papa looked over his shoulder, there was Arcadia, frozen in the doorway. She said, "The foundation is at war." Papa looked helplessly at Mama, then nodded. "And they're losing?" Again, the nod. Arcadia felt the unbearable catch in her throat and slowly approached the table. "Is it over?" she whispered. "Over?" repeated Papa with false heartiness. "Who said it was over? In war, lots of things can happen. And... "Sit down, darling," said Mama soothingly. "No one should talk before breakfast. You're not in a healthy condition with no food in the stomach." But Arcadia ignored her. "Are the Calganians on Terminus?" "No," said Papa, seriously. "The news is from last week, and Terminus is still fighting. This is honest. I'm telling the truth. And the Foundation is still strong. Do you want me to get you the newspapers?" "Yes." She read them over what she could eat of her breakfast, and her eyes blurred as she read. Santani and Carell were gone, without a fight. A squadron of the Foundation's navy had been trapped in the sparsely sunned Ifni sector and wiped out to almost the last ship. And now the Foundation was back to the Four Kingdom Core, the original realm which had been built up under Salvar Hardin, the first mayor. But still it fought. And still there might be a chance. And whatever happened, she must inform her father. She must somehow reach his ear. She must. But how? With a war in the way. She asked Papa after breakfast, "Are you going out on a new mission soon, Mr. Palver?" Papa was on the large chair on the front lawn, sunning himself. A fat cigar smoldered between his plump fingers, and he looked like a beatific pug dog. "A mission?" he repeated lazily. "Who knows? That's a nice vacation, and my leave isn't up. Why talk about new missions? You're restless, Arcady?" "Me? No, I like it here. You're very good to me, you and Mrs. Palver." He waved his hand at her, brushing away her words. Arcadia said, "I was thinking about the war." "But don't think about it. What can you do? If it's something you can't help, why hurt yourself over it?" "But I was thinking that the Foundation has lost most of its farming worlds. They're probably rationing food there." Papa looked uncomfortable. "Don't worry. It'll be all right." She scarcely listened. "I wish I could carry food to them, that's what. You know, after the mule died and the Foundation rebelled, Terminus was just about isolated for a time, and General Han Pritcher, who succeeded the mule for a while, was laying siege to it. Food was running awfully low, and my father says that his father told him that they only had dry amino acid concentrates that tasted terrible. Why, one egg cost 200 credits. And then they broke the siege just in time, and food ships came through from Santani. It must have been an awful time. Probably it's happening all over now." There was a pause, and then Arcadia said, "You know, I'll bet the Foundation would be willing to pay smugglers' prices for food now. Double and triple and more. Gee, if any cooperative, for instance, here on Trantor took over the job, they might lose some ships, but I'll bet they'd be war millionaires before it was over. The Foundation traders in the old days used to do that all the time. There'd be a war, so they'd sell whatever was needed bad and take their chances.
Golly, they used to make as much as 2 million credits out of one trip. Profit. That was just out of what they could carry on one ship, too. Papa stirred. His cigar had gone out unnoticed. A deal for food, huh? But the foundation is so far away. Oh, I know. I guess you couldn't do it from here. If you took a regular liner, you probably couldn't get closer than Messina or Smoshik. And after that, you'd have to hire a small scout ship or something to slip you through the lines. Papa's hand brushed at his hair as he calculated. 2 weeks later, arrangements for the mission were completed. Mama railed for most of the time. First at the incurable obstinacy with which he courted suicide. Then at the incredible obstinacy with which he refused to allow her to accompany him. Papa said, Mama, why do you act like an old lady? I can't take you. It's a man's work. What do you think a war is? Fun? Child's play? Then why do you go? Are you a man, you old fool? With a leg and half an arm in the grave? Let some of the young ones go. Not a fat, bald head like you. I'm not a bald head, retorted Papa with dignity. I've got yet lots of hair, and why should it not be me that gets the commission? Why a young fella? Listen, this could mean millions. She knew that, and she subsided. Arcadia saw him once before he left. She said, Are you going to Terminus? Why not? You say yourself they need bread and rice and potatoes? Well, I'll make a deal with them, and they'll get it. Well, then, just one thing. If you're going to Terminus, would you see my father? And Papa's face crinkled and seemed to melt into sympathy. Oh, and I have to wait for you to tell me. Sure, I'll see him. I'll tell him you're safe and everything's okay, and when the war is over, I'll bring you back. Thanks. I'll tell you how to find him. His name is Dr. Torin Durrell, and he lives in Stanmark. That's just outside Terminus City, and you can get a little commuting plane that goes there. We're at 55 Channel Drive. Wait, and I'll write it down. No, no. Arcadia's arm shot out. You mustn't write anything down. You must remember and find him without anybody's help. Papa looked puzzled. Then he shrugged his shoulders. All right, then. It's 55 Channel Drive in Stanmark, outside Terminus City, and you commute there by plane. All right. One other thing. Yes? Would you tell him something from me? Sure. I want to whisper it to you. He leaned his plump cheek toward her, and the little whispered sound passed from one to the other. Papa's eyes were round. That's what you want me to say? But it doesn't make any sense. He'll know what you mean. Just say I sent it, and that I said he would know what it means. And you say it exactly the way I told you, no different. You won't forget it. How can I forget it? 5 little words. Look, no, no. She hopped up and down in the intensity of her feelings. Don't repeat it. Don't ever repeat it to anyone. Forget all about it except to my father. Promise me. Papa shrugged again. I promise. All right. All right, she said mournfully. And as he passed down the drive to where the air taxi waited to take him to the spaceport, she wondered if she had signed his death warrant. She wondered if she would ever see him again. She scarcely dared to walk into the house again to face the good, kind Mama. Maybe when it was all over, she had better kill herself for what she had done to them.
Khorasan, Battle of. Fought on 1-3-377 FE between the forces of the Foundation and those of Lord Stettin of Kalgan. It was the last battle of consequence during the Interregnum. Encyclopedia Galactica. Chapter 19. End of War. Joel Turbor, in his new role of war correspondent, found his bulk encased in a naval uniform, and rather liked it. He enjoyed being back on the air, and some of the fierce helplessness of the futile fight against the Second Foundation left him in the excitement of another sort of fight, with substantial ships and ordinary men. To be sure, the Foundation's fight had not been remarkable for victories, but it was still possible to be philosophic about the matter. After 6 months, the hard core of the Foundation was untouched, and the hard core of the fleet was still in being. With the new additions since the start of the war, it was almost as strong numerically, and stronger, technically, than before the defeat at Ifni. And meanwhile, planetary defenses were being strengthened, the armed forces better trained, administrative efficiency was having some of the water squeezed out of it, and much of the Kalganians' conquering fleet was being wallowed down through the necessity of occupying the conquered territory. At the moment, Turbor was with the Third Fleet in the outer reaches of the Anacreonian sector. In line with his policy of making this a little man's war, he was interviewing Fennel Limor, Engineer Third Class, Volunteer. "Tell us a little more about yourself, sailor," said Turbor.
"Ain't much to tell."
Limor shuffled his feet and allowed a faint, bashful smile to cover his face, as though he could see all the millions that undoubtedly could see him at the moment.
"I'm a Locrian. Got a job in an air car factory. Section head and good pay. I'm married. Got two kids, both girls. Say, I couldn't say hello to them. Could I, in case they're listening?"
"Go ahead, sailor. The video is all yours."
"Gosh, thanks."
He burbled, "Hello, Mila, in case you're listening. I'm fine. Is Sunny all right? And Tama? I think of you all the time, and maybe I'll be back on furlough after we get back to port. I got your food parcel, but I'm sending it back. We get our regular mess, but they say the civilians are a little tight. I guess that's all. I'll look her up next time I'm on Locra, sailor, and make sure she's not short of food. Okay?" The young man smiled broadly and nodded his head.
"Thank you, Mr. Turbor. I'd appreciate that."
"All right. Suppose you tell us, then. You're a volunteer, aren't you?"
"Sure am. If anyone picks a fight with me, I don't have to wait for anyone to drag me in. I joined up the day I heard about the Hober Mallow."
"That's a fine spirit. Have you seen much action? I notice you're wearing two battle stars."
"Pshh," the sailor spat. "Those weren't battles, they were chases. The Kalganians don't fight, unless they have odds of 5-1 or better in their favor. Even then, they just edge in and try to cut us up ship by ship. Cousin of mine was at Ifni, and he was on a ship that got away, the old Ebling Meese. He says it was the same there. They had their main fleet against just a wing division of ours, and down to where we only had 5 ships left, they kept stalking instead of fighting. We got twice as many of their ships at that fight."
"Then you think we're going to win the war?"
"Sure bet. Now that we aren't retreating. Even if things got too bad, that's when I'd expect the Second Foundation to step in. We still got the Selden plan, and they know it too."
Turbor's lips curled a bit. "You're counting on the Second Foundation, then?" The answer came with honest surprise.
"Well, doesn't everyone?"
Junior Officer Tipulum stepped into Turbor's room after the visicast. He shoved a cigarette at the correspondent and knocked his cap back to a perilous balance on the occiput.
We picked up a prisoner, he said.
Yes?
Crazy little fella. Claims to be a neutral. Diplomatic immunity, no less. I don't think they know what to do with him. His name's Palvro. Palver, something like that, and he says he's from Trantor. Don't know what in space he's doing in a war zone.
But Turbor had swung to a sitting position on his bunk, and the nap he had been about to take was forgotten. He remembered quite well his last interview with Durrell, the day after war had been declared and he was shoving off. Prime Palver, he said. It was a statement.
Tiplum paused and let the smoke trickle out the sides of his mouth.
Yeah, he said. How in space did you know?
Never mind. Can I see him?
Space, I can't say. The old man has him in his own room for questioning. Everyone figures he's a spy.
You tell the old man that I know him, if he's who he claims he is. I'll take the responsibility.
Captain Dixill on the flagship of the Third Fleet watched unremittingly at the grand detector. No ship could avoid being a source of nuclear radiation, not even if it were lying an inert mass, and each focal point of such radiation was a little sparkle in the three-dimensional field. Each one of the Foundation's ships were accounted for, and no sparkle was left over, now that the little spy who claimed to be a neutral had been picked up. For a while, that outside ship had created a stir in the captain's quarters. The tactics might have needed changing on short notice. As it was.
Are you sure you have it? He asked.
Commander Sen nodded.
I will take my squadron through hyperspace. Radius 10.00 parsecs. Theta 268.52 degrees. Phi 84.15 degrees. Return to origin at 1330. Total absence 11.83 hours.
Right. Now we are going to count on pinpoint return as regards both space and time. Understand?
Yes, Captain.
He looked at his wristwatch. My ships will be ready by 0140.
Good, said Captain Dixill.
The Kalganian squadron was not within detector range now, but they would be soon. There was independent information to that effect. Without Sen's squadron, the Foundation forces would be badly outnumbered. But the captain was quite confident. Quite confident.
Prime Palver looked sadly about him. First at the tall, skinny admiral, then at the others, everyone in uniform. And now, at this last one, big and stout, with his collar open and no tie, not like the rest, who said he wanted to speak to him.
Joel Turbor was saying, I am perfectly aware, Admiral, of the serious possibilities involved here, but I tell you that if I can be allowed to speak to him for a few minutes, I may be able to settle the current uncertainty.
Is there any reason why you can't question him before me?
Turbor pursed his lips and looked stubborn.
Admiral, he said, while I have been attached to your ships, the Third Fleet has received an excellent press. You may station men outside the door if you like, and you may return in 5 minutes. But meanwhile, humor me a bit, and your public relations will not suffer.
Do you understand me?
He did.
Then Turbor, in the isolation that followed, turned to Palver and said quickly, What is the name of the girl you abducted?
And Palver could simply stare round-eyed and shake his head.
No nonsense, said Turbor. If you do not answer, you will be a spy, and spies are blasted without trial in war crime.
Arcadia Durrell, gasped Palver.
Well.
All right, then. Is she safe?
Palver nodded.
You had better be sure of that, or it won't be well for you.
She is in good health. Perfectly safe, said Palver, palely.
The Admiral returned. Well?
The man, sir, is not a spy.
You may believe what he tells you. I vouch for him.
That's so. The Admiral frowned. Then he represents an agricultural cooperative on Trantor that wants to make a trade treaty with Terminus for the delivery of grains and potatoes. Well, all right. But he can't leave now.
Why not? Asked Palver quickly.
Because we're in the middle of a battle. After it is over, assuming we're still alive, we'll take you to Terminus.
The Kalganian fleet that spanned through space detected the Foundation ships from an incredible distance and were themselves detected. Like little fireflies in each other's grand detectors, they closed in across the emptiness. And the Foundation's admiral frowned and said, "This must be their main push. Look at the numbers." Then, "They won't stand up before us, though. Not if Sen's detachment can be counted on." Commander Sen had left hours before, at the first detection of the coming enemy. There was no way of altering the plan now. It worked or it didn't, but the Admiral felt quite comfortable, as did the officers, as did the men. Again, watch the fireflies. Like a deadly ballet dance in precise formations, they sparked. The Foundation fleet edged slowly backwards. Hours passed and the fleet veered slowly off, teasing the advancing enemy slightly off course, then more so. In the minds of the dictators of the battle plan, there was a certain volume of space that must be occupied by the Kalganian ships. Out from that volume crept the Foundationers. Into it slipped the Kalganians. Those that passed out again were attacked, suddenly and fiercely. Those that stayed within were not touched. It all depended on the reluctance of the ships of Lord Stedden to take the initiative themselves, on their willingness to remain where none attacked. Captain Dixell stared frigidly at his wristwatch. It was 13:10. "We've got 20 minutes," he said. The lieutenant at his side nodded tensely. "It looks all right so far, Captain. We've got more than 90% of them boxed. If we can keep them that way."
"Yes, if."
The Foundation ships were drifting forward again, very slowly. Not quick enough to urge a Kalganian retreat, and just quickly enough to discourage a Kalganian advance. They preferred to wait. And the minutes passed. At 13:25, the Admiral's buzzer sounded in 75 ships of the Foundation's line, and they built up to a maximum acceleration toward the front plane of the Kalganian fleet, itself 300 strong. The Kalganian shields flared into action, and the vast energy beams flicked out. Every one of the 300 concentrated in the same direction, toward their mad attackers who bored down relentlessly, uncaringly, and... At 13:30, 50 ships under Commander Sen appeared from nowhere, in one single bound through hyperspace to a calculated spot at a calculated time, and were spaced in tearing fury at the unprepared Kalganian rear. The trap worked perfectly. The Kalganians still had numbers on their side, but they were in no mood to count. Their first effort was to escape, and the formation, once broken, was only the more vulnerable, as the enemy ships bumbled into one another's path. After a while, it took on the proportions of a rat hunt. Of 300 Kalganian ships, the core and pride of their fleet, some 60 or less, many in a state of near hopeless disrepair, reached Kalgan once more. The Foundation loss was 8 ships out of a total of 125. It was the third day of the new year of 377.
Preem Palver landed on Terminus at the height of the celebration. He found the Fuhrer distracting, but before he left the planet, he had accomplished two things and received one request. The two things accomplished were, one, the conclusion of an agreement whereby Palver's cooperative was to deliver 20 shiploads of certain foodstuffs per month for the next year at a war price, without, thanks to the recent battle, a corresponding war risk, and, two, the transfer to Dr. Durrell of Arcadia's five short words. For a startled moment, Durrell had stared wide-eyed at him, and then he had made his request. It was to carry an answer back to Arcadia. Palver liked it. It was a simple answer and made sense. It was, "Come back now. There won't be any danger." Lord Stettin was in raging frustration. To watch his every weapon break in his hands, to feel the firm fabric of his military might part like the rotten thread it suddenly turned out to be, would have turned phlegmaticism itself into flowing lava. And yet he was helpless, and knew it. He hadn't really slept well in weeks. He hadn't shaved in 3 days. He had canceled all audiences. His admirals were left to themselves, and none knew better than the Lord of Caligan that very little time and no further defeats need elapse before he would have to contend with internal rebellion. Lev Mayris, First Minister, was no help. He stood there, calm and indecently old, with his thin, nervous finger stroking, as always, the wrinkled line from nose to chin. "Well," shouted Stettin at him, "contribute something. We stand here defeated, do you understand? Defeated. And why? I don't know why. There you have it. I don't know why. Do you know why?"
"I think so," said Mayris calmly. "Treason." The word came out softly, and other words followed as softly. "You've known of treason, and you've kept quiet. You served the fool I ejected from the First Citizenship, and you think you can serve whatever foul rat replaces me. If you have acted so, I will extract your entrails for it and burn them before your living eyes."
Mayris was unmoved. "I have tried to fill you with my own doubts, not once, but many times. I have dinned it in your ears, and you have preferred the advice of others because it stuffed your ego better. Matters have turned out not as I feared, but even worse. If you do not care to listen now, say so, sir, and I shall leave, and in due course, deal with your successor, whose first act, no doubt, will be to sign a treaty of peace." Stettin stared at him red-eyed, enormous fists slowly clenching and unclenching. "Speak, you gray slug. Speak." "I have told you often, sir, that you are not the mule. You may control ships and guns, but you cannot control the minds of your subjects. Are you aware, sir, of who it is you are fighting? You fight the Foundation, which is never defeated. The Foundation, which is protected by the Selden Plan. The Foundation, which is destined to form a new empire."
"There is no plan, no longer. Mun has said so."
"Then Mun is wrong. And if he were right, what then?" "You and I, sir, are not the people. the men and women of Kalgan and its subject worlds believe utterly and deeply in the Selden Plan, as do all the inhabitants of this end of the galaxy. Nearly 400 years of history teach the fact that the Foundation cannot be beaten. Neither the kingdoms, nor the warlords, nor the old